email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Great song, You Make Me Feel Like Dancing, part of the soundtrack of a lot of our lives, and the work of our next guest, Leo Sayre. Hello, Leo.
Hello there. How you doing, Ray?
You're good. Thanks for the music, Leo. Thanks for the music.
Oh, anytime, anytime. You know, no, it's oh my God, it's been a fabulous life. I can only say it's still going on.
Yes, yeah. Listen, you had a birthday last week, so happy 77th birthday.
Thank you.
Yes, and you're still flying it, and you're coming to Ireland in July. You're in the National Opera House in Wexford, Friday, July 11th, Saturday, July 12th, Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, Dublin, then Sunday, 13th of July, Cork Opera House, then Ulster Hall in Belfast, July 25th. So we've got that out of the way. And of course, Ulster Hall is in Ulster, and that's where your mum was originally from, Fermanagh.
Up north.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Yeah, well, my parents were all around the border country of Fermanagh and Cavan. You know, and the mum's family.
Yeah.
They were all around there. Mum was born in Maguire's Bridge, just by Enniskillen. Uh-huh. And we used to come over, you know, I mean, almost every summer, school holidays, you know, from when I, and I think it was from when I was about 4 years old to about 14. So every year we were over having fun with our Irish cousins, hopping backwards and forwards over the border. We used to call it the butter run in those days because, you know, you'd be bringing Irish butter, you know, into Northern Ireland. So it was quite funny. And probably other things as well. We won't go into that.
I believe there's still a guard up on the border looking for Leo Sayre. Of course, it would have been Gerard's Sayre, wasn't it?
It was Gerard Sayre in those days, yes. Yeah. And my dad was from Kent in England, and mum was from, as I say, Fermanagh. Mm. And you know, Ireland was very much in my bloodstream. So in the early days, I mean, it was where I first kind of experienced Cayleys and music and everybody in the family having great talents over in Ireland. And you know, whereas we were kind of a bit, you know, the English side of the family was a bit staid, as it were.
And Leo, that's because there is a huge difference, isn't there, in that traditional Irish music versus what happens in England?
Yeah. I think there was in those days particularly, there was a real sort of like a contrast of cultures. Mm. I think it's changed because basically, you know, when the 60s came along, the Beatles, the Stones, you know, soul music coming over from America, I think things softened. I think that, you know, I think Britain and particularly England suffered from that, you know, that never had it so good after the war kind of thing where everybody, should we say, was conventional, and they behaved, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've got Teddy Boys, you've got rockers, you've got all the mods, you've got all the way to the beatniks and everything, and suddenly the world changed. Youth took over, and I think that changed everything.
Yeah. Like Radio Caroline, Luxembourg, and they would have been playing your hits during the 70s on those radio stations.
Oh, my goodness. You know, when we first came in, figure it, you know, that there was no social media, no mobile phones. Mm. Television was still basically in black and white. Every now and then you find a colour. Somebody had a colour set if they were, you know, very rich. but you know, music didn't kind of... Music came out of great places. In other words, like, look at it, Ireland. It came out from, like, peaty old pubs, you know. Yes. Music came out of folk. It came out of traditional music. And in England, it came from the working class, you know, like Liverpool and places like that. There were places that had it tough. So it kind of grew out of, or else in London clubs, you know, where all the 60s groups kind of came from. And it was a tough kind of thing, you know, it's a tough birth.
And Leo, did you play in folk clubs initially?
I did. I played harmonica with folk guys, and you know, and I did some sort of country blues stuff, and I busked on the street. You know, that's where One Man Band comes from. The lyric of that, you know, and played harmonica with a lot of blues bands as well. You know, when the folk thing died off, it was blues like the John Mayall blues band and Peter Green with Fleetwood Mac and Eric Clapton with Cream, etc. Yeah. You know, you were suddenly coming into that blues and soul world, and that was interesting.
You were a shy young man. And did music allow you to get out of yourself?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, when I was very, very young, I had a great Irish priest from Donegal, Father McHale, and he was just this amazing man who spotted that somehow in the midst of the choir I had a good voice. So he took me under his wing and taught me to sing and taught me how to develop the voice, you know, from the stomach, from the whole body, rather than just from the throat. He was a revelation, and my parents were good Catholics, so, you know, we used to call our house the presbytery because the priests were always popping in. So that was what started me singing, really. Uh-huh. You know, from a very early age, from like 9, 10, 11, I was already performing, as it were, in a way, in cathedrals and that, singing solo, you know, with all of this inspiration.
And your mum, which often happens, one of your biggest fans, and another priest is part of your story as well, in a small way.
Your namesake,
Father Brian Darcy.
Yes. Yeah.
People have mistook him for my dad in the past, Leo, believe it or not.
Oh, my word. He's a lovely man, Brian.
He's a wonderful man, yeah. Yeah.
I just posted something recently, I have to tell you, on Facebook, where I posted the original interview that Brian did with me in 1973 at the start of my career. And in the article that he put in the magazine The Cross, which all good Catholics will remember as the go-to pamphlet, he prints the letter from my mother, who is introducing him. Father Brian, I want you to know about, you know. And so
which is, it's, and she's such, like my so PR sweet. Person. That's so sweet.
Isn't that great?
And it's sort of a mini CV, but lovingly written. You know, she tells that you went to St. Peter's, and then...
That's right, she's got the whole lot. It's fantastic CV.
And you met Dave.
I couldn't have written it better.
You met Dave, your writing partner, Dave Courtney, and then you wrote Roger Daltrey from The Who.
Yeah.
It's. And she's constantly referring to you as Gerard, as opposed to Leo, which is great.
Yeah, and you know, later on, I stayed in touch with Brian. Yeah. We would often talk whenever I'd come over, and sometimes, you know, he'd call me in LA or something like that. We'd always have great chats, you know, and I valued him as a good man.
We're a big fan of him here.
That's good.
So, Leo, what was the moment? You know, was there a moment? Was it a Top of the Pops? Was it an Old Grey Whistle Test? Was there a moment where you sort of, you know, your inner dialogue with yourself said, this is it, I've arrived?
I've happening, yeah, yes. Yeah. I don't know, really. I think it was when I first went to the States, actually.
Right.
Because I was appearing, you know, as the Pierrot, the white-faced clown.
Yes.
And I'm doing all the gigs in England and Europe, and I was supporting Roxy Music on the first tour in 1972, you know. Everything's kind of breaking, and, you know, you're so busy, you don't get that realisation, because it's like you're so nervous all the time. You're trying to keep up with what's happening to you. But then when I went to America, all of a sudden, you know, you're mobbed in a foreign country and you realize your music has traveled. They get it.
Yeah.
They're all singing back the words to you. And that was the moment I think that I got it in 1974, appearing as the clown and the white face, you know, with my English band, and we're sitting there and the adulation is ridiculous.
The show must
go on.
It's gone
over the top.
The show must go on. Yeah.
Yeah. The Three Dog Night had the hit with it.
Great song. And who did a cover of that in America?
Well, it's the, yeah, that's the irony, you see. I arrived in LA with my band and really thrilled and everything, and we'd find out that some other band has released a cover of my song. We didn't realise that covers were good things in those days. You know, songwriters like myself would make money. Nobody had explained that to me, so I thought, these bastards, they stole my song. You know, how dare they? But I did get to meet them eventually, and they're a nice bunch. But everybody used to come up to me and say, why did you change the words the Three Dog Night song? Because you see, they were singing, they were dressed up as circus clowns,
right,
and I was dressed up as the kind of sad French theatrical clown, the nemesis of Harlequin, you know. So it was a more serious thing. Yeah. And they're singing, we must let the show go on, and the words are, I won't let the show go on.
Now, in fairness, legally, I think they should have asked permission to change the words. I think that's the legal,
well,
isn't it?
Well, I think so, but, you know, good for them. They turned out to be lovely blokes.
Yes. And you got the copyright, you got the royalties on it.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I mean, I found out later I was going to make some money out of it, so it was all right.
Everyone's a winner.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the clown thing, was that, were you hiding behind that or not?
Well, it was a good device, put it like that. I mean, I was always fascinated in the character of Pierrot. There was a movie called Les Enfants de Paradis, a French film that I loved, where there was an actor in it who played that character, and I adored that movie. So when I went to, it's funny enough, it's Roger Daltrey's cousin. We'd just written the songs for Roger Daltrey's first album, myself and David Courtney. I went to see his cousin because he was going to do the record cover like he'd done the cover of the Daltrey album. So he said, how do you see yourself? And he had a picture behind him, and there was a Pierrot on the picture. And I said, like that. I pointed. He said, right, we'll get this guy Julian, a Belgian clown, a street performer. We'll get him to come down tomorrow, and you can put on his suit. And I went, oh, okay. And the next thing I knew, we had a beautiful makeup girl who was, I mean, she was just so incredible. It was like theatrical makeup they put on me. They built the character with the suit and everything. And I looked in the mirror and I thought, God, I can get away with anything wearing this. You know, so it became a device.
Yeah.
And I was very shy, like we said earlier on in the interview, you know. So here was a way for me to actually, you know, somebody actually wrote just recently, said I was a geisha. It was almost like you were playing another person. Uh-huh. You know, it's like when a woman becomes a geisha, she loses who she is and she becomes someone else.
Yeah, it's an alter ego.
So it was
an alter
like
ego.
That.
Yeah.
So it was a beautiful thing to kind of not only hide behind, but enjoy the contrast. Because, you know, the contrast, I would get off stage in America, wipe all the makeup off and come back. Again, I'd get into a car that drove me around and I'd come out to the front door looking normal and say, that guy was great, wasn't he? I didn't have to listen to the critics or the managers or anything.
I'm wondering, back in the day when you were coming on summer holidays to Fermanagh, did you go to the local hall for the disco? And if you did, was there a slow set? Because one of my memories from back in the 70s, so I'm just thinking, I would have been in my teenage years when I need you
dance halls in those days.
Well, but this your song was the big one of the big ones in the slow set, When I Need You.
Yeah, that's right. The waltz. Just close my eyes and I'm with you. And all that I saw wanna give you, babe. It's only a heartbeat away. It's not easy when the road is your driver. Honey, that's a heavy load that we bear. But you know I won't be traveling a lifetime. It's cold out, but hold out and do.
Classic. Leo Sayer, that's a classic. Yeah, that is a classic.
I know there was always the waltz, wasn't there, in those dance things. I remember in my hometown of Shoreham-by-Sea, we had a youth club. That's what it was. We had youth clubs in those days.
That's it.
So I got paired with an impossibly tall girl. And I wanted to kiss her, but I couldn't reach. And I always remember that, being so frustrated, you know.
And your song wasn't playing, obviously, at that stage.
But, you know, but I think that that's, you know, Albert Hammond was a great traditionalist, the guy who wrote
that song.
Carol
yeah.
Bayer Sabre yes. wrote the lyrics. I think that, you know, they were inspired by songs of that time, you yeah. know, when we used to have waltzes like that, you know.
So you're doing what you're doing for over 50 years,
yeah.
40 hit singles, 18 studio albums. Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking at the doors it has opened for you and the people you've met, and you did like a number of BBC TV shows, Linda Ronstadt, Elkie Brooks, Jethro Tull, Roger Daughtry,
yes,
you've mentioned.
Yes.
But the one that most impresses me is Miss Piggy.
Well, you know, I mean, look, I first met Jim Henson and Frank Oz.
Yeah.
We must mention him as well. Miss Frank Oz, of course, was the persona of Miss Piggy,
Piggy
the guy who played. He was the voice, you know. Piggy! You know,
Mwah.
Yeah. and so I first met them when they were doing Sesame Street in America on that first tour that I went over there in 1974. And we sort of hit it off. And when they arrived in England and they started doing the Muppet Show, they contacted me. I was one of the first people that they contacted to say, will you be on the show?
Mm.
But for some reason, the producers didn't think I was big enough at the time, or they wanted to kind of like have more, you know, film stars and Americans kind of on the show. So I didn't get onto there until
the
second
Muppet
series.
Oh, you did make the cut, right? Okay.
I didn't make the cut at first,
right.
You know, although Jim Henson was kind of saying, no, we've got to have Leo, come
yeah.
on. You know, so in the end, he got his way on the second series. And that started a whole load of things that I did with the Muppets, you know. I was even going to be in the Muppet movie and everything, because we just all, I mean, Jim was a great friend and we just got on like
yeah,
a house
yeah,
on fire, you know.
Yeah.
We spend a lot of time socially together.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I've had my hand up the frog.
Here, Miss Piggy and you, right? I'm more interested in that relationship. What did you sing with her?
Well, yeah, knowing them, I sang When I Need You
with
on the Late Late Show, which is usually the Johnny Carson show.
Yeah.
But I can't remember. I think Frog Piggy, no, Kermit was hosting.
Ah, guest hosting.
And it was in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Yeah, Vincent Price was on the show. I
wow.
remember that. Yeah, and Bernadette Peters as well was on it. And so I'm doing the show and they arrange a duet with Miss Piggy, and it was hilarious. I mean, it was just funny.
What lovely
you
memories!
You can see the clip now; it's still on YouTube.
I'm going to look it up when I go upstairs.
Yeah.
What lovely memories! Like, what lovely memories to draw on.
Well, you know, look, they were lovely people. I mean, Jim is one of the most creative people, not just a puppeteer, but he was a great sort of great human being, you know. And so, spending time with him was glorious. I remember taking him to Lotus Cars, and he got a green Lotus Elan. And he said, Leo, you're coming with me because you know these guys, because I had a lot of motor racing friends.
Yeah.
And we spent the day there and that was fabulous. And he was just such a lovely guy to be around, you know.
Have you got a passion for cars, Leo?
I do.
Right.
I don't keep any fancy cars. I drive a boring one now because I put the money into the studio.
Yeah.
So I used to have Mustangs and things like that in America.
Right.
And I do love cars. Yes, it's part of my life. And Formula One, I've always been around that, you know. I mean, I've known your great Irishman, Eddie Jordan, very
yes,
well as a
yes,
close friend.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
RIP, we
ah,
miss
yeah,
Eddie.
Yeah, that's
you know, and
sad.
John Watson's still a buddy.
Yeah.
So, you know,
you're in there.
Eddie Irvine,
you're in.
All those guys.
And you appeared with Fred Astaire.
I did. What happened was I did a chat show I can't remember her name, but it was the Dinah Shore show, that's right, in Los Angeles. And she said, oh, we had the great Fred Astaire. And I said, oh, my God, I adore Fred Astaire.
Yeah.
He was one of my greatest inspirations. So she just put that into her head. And 3 weeks later, I was back on the show and she said, I got a surprise for you. And it was my birthday. And Fred Astaire came out and sang Happy Birthday to me.
Well, look at that.
Now, how about that?
How about that indeed?
What are the chances? You know?
I have to
talk. That's like Elvis appearing in front of Bono.
Yeah. An impossibility, we know. Well, maybe,
oh,
I don't know.
Absolutely.
AI, come on.
With AI, it will probably get done, you know.
Listen, I have to talk to you about Celebrity Big Brother. So, how long ago? That's about 18 years ago. And do you regret
Oh, it's bloody
agreeing
awful.
To do it?
Well, I had a guy. I just had the hit with Thunder in My Heart again.
Yes, a remix.
You know?
Yeah, and which was great.
Yeah, so there was a team behind that, and one of them was a manager who basically said, "Leo, you know, after this hit, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Come over." I was still in Australia at that time. I'd just come to Australia. He said, "Come over," and we were doing some TV shows, you know, that kind of led to it being number one. And he said, "You know, let's talk about some ideas." And I met this guy, and he said, "Look, we just get you on one of these big shows over here, and you know, they're like Dancing with the Stars, those kind of things."
Yeah.
And it turned out to be Celebrity Big Brother.
Right.
And I didn't even know much about the show, but I came over eventually, and it was over a horrible winter. I had a filthy cold when I went in there, so I wasn't in a very good mood. And I didn't realize until I got into the house how much I suffer from claustrophobia.
Right.
So it was they picked on me, you know, they wanted, because little Leo had left England, they made that a modus operandi to dig in, you know, he left a sinking ship. And there were all sorts of shenanigans that went on, mate, that honestly were pretty awful.
I'll take that you did regret doing it then.
I don't regret it because I learned a lot about human nature.
Well, there you go.
It's a little bit like, you know, if you did something naughty and you know, with the tax and you spent, you know, 3 months in prison. If you're not a bad person, you're going to learn something from it, aren't you?
Yeah.
So I learned a lot about humanity in that show, and I'm kind of grateful that I did it, even though I broke out because I was it just got impossible. But of course, I get a bad rap for it because I was naughty and rude in there, and I accept that. But at the same time, it was interesting.
Yeah.
But you know, to see that world and to see how, I mean, how awfully greedy and cheap it is. It's quite an experience, really, I believe.
We'll take a bit of the song that got you there. Well, the original version of it, Thunder in My Heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're talking to Leo Sayre. He's in Australia, but he's coming to Ireland in July, from July the 11th to July 25th. National Opera House in Wexford, Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, Cork Opera House and Ulster Hall in Belfast. And Australia is your home. You're an Australian citizen.
Yes, I've landed very nicely here over the last few years. Been here since 2005.
Yeah.
And we live in the country, kind of between Sydney and Canberra, very high up. So we get sort of, having real Irish weather tonight, I'll tell you, it's raining like mad. But we're pretty high up, and we have the wonderful mix of fir trees and parrots.
Lovely.
How about that?
Yeah. And how do you feel your days?
It's homely.
How do you feel your days?
Well,
Leo?
You know, I have a studio here. I've built a studio in a barn next door to the house. The house is going through a few renos at the moment, right. Renovations, but it's a lovely here, and it's a village of only 400 people.
Oh.
So there's plenty to do,
yeah.
And I'm still making music, you know, preparing to, we're probably going to do a Leo documentary soon, so, and I've just written my memoirs. And
you're busy,
you know,
It's
a nice moment to look back, you know.
And you sound like you're in great form, as they say in Ireland.
I feel fantastic. Yeah. I mean, considering I've just turned 77, I'm feeling amazing. I mean, mentally, I'm feeling like I'm a 25-year-old.
Yeah.
There's only some mornings and some evenings that the bones will tell you how old you are. You know what I mean, right? Other than that, it's pretty good.
What you're saying is some mornings you don't feel like dancing. Is that
wow, it? Wow, yeah. No, it takes a little while, you know, to get the legs moving. Yeah.
I've still got
the hair. So, you know.
You do not,
boy,
do you? I didn't want
best
to ask.
Of three.
This. Yeah, wow, brilliant. He still has the hair. Leo's there. Still has the hair.
Man.
I'm sitting here bald, jealous. That's why I'm saying that, Leo.
Stop
there
it.
You go. Right. Listen, it's been a real pleasure talking.
Thank
you very much. It's been a real pleasure, Leo. Thanks so much for talking to us, and we look forward to coming along to one of the gigs when you come to Ireland.
Please do. Yeah. Please do. We'll be good. We'll meet up, Ray.
Brilliant. Thanks, Leo. Mind yourself.
And my love to everybody at RTE.
See you now.
All right. Cheers now.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.